said Bunch expressively. "Oh, I'd better get on with this quickly. I don't want to die of cold." With the quickness born of practice, she collected the necessary paraphernalia. Vases, water, flower holders. "Oh, I wish we had lilies," thought Bunch to herself. "I get so tired of these scraggy chrysanthemums." Her nimble fingers arranged the blooms in her holders. There was nothing particularly original or artistic about the decorations, for Bunch Harmon herself was neither original nor artistic, but it was a homely and pleasant arrangement. Carrying the vases carefully, Bunch stepped up the aisle and made her way towards the altar. As she did so, the sun came out. It shone through the east window of somewhat crude-coloured glass, mostly blue and red, the gift of a wealthy Victorian churchgoer. The effect was almost startling in its sudden opulence. "Like jewels," thought Bunch. Suddenly, she stopped, staring ahead of her. On the chancel steps was a huddled, dark form. Putting down the flowers carefully, Bunch went up to it and bent over it. It was a man lying there, huddled over on himself. Bunch knelt down by him and slowly, carefully, she turned him over. Her fingers went to his pulse, a pulse so feeble and fluttering that it told its own story, as did the almost greenish pallor of his face. There was no doubt, Bunch thought, that the man was dying. He was a man of about 45, dressed in a dark, shabby suit. She laid down the limp hand she had picked up and looked at his other hand. This seemed clenched like a fist on his breast. Looking more closely, she saw that the fingers were closed over what seemed to be a large wad or handkerchief, which he was holding tightly to his chest. All round the clenched hand there were splashes of a dry brown fluid, which, Bunch guessed, was dry blood. Bunch sat back on her heels, frowning. Up till now, the man's eyes had been closed, but at this point they suddenly opened and fixed themselves on Bunch's face. They were neither dazed nor wandering. They seemed fully alive and intelligent. His lips moved, and Bunch bent forward to catch the words, or rather the word. It was only one word that he said. "Sanctuary." There was, she thought, just a very faint smile as he breathed out this word. There was no mistaking it, for after a moment he said it again. "Sanctuary." Then with a faint, long-drawn-out sigh, his eyes closed again. Once more Bunch's fingers went to his pulse. It was still there, but fainter now and more intermittent. She got up with decision. "Don't move," she said, "or try to move. I'm going for help." The man's eyes opened again, but he seemed now to be fixing his attention on the coloured light that came through the east window. He murmured something that Bunch could not quite catch. She thought, startled, that it might have been her husband's name. "Julian," she said. "Did you come here to find Julian?" But there was no answer. The man lay with eyes closed, his breathing coming in slow, shallow fashion. Bunch turned and left the church rapidly. She glanced at her watch and nodded with some satisfaction. Dr. Griffiths would still be in his surgery. It was only a couple of minutes' walk from the church. She went in without waiting to knock or ring, passing through the waiting room and into the doctor's surgery. "You must come at once," said Bunch. "There's a man dying in the church." Some minutes later, Dr. Griffiths rose from his knees after a brief examination. "Can we move him from here into the vicarage? I can attend to him better there." "Well, not that it's any use." "Of course," said Bunch. "I'll go and get things ready. I'll get Harper and Joan, shall I, to help you carry him." "Thanks. I can telephone from the vicarage for an ambulance, but I'm afraid... by the time it comes..." He left the remark unfinished. Bunch said, "Internal bleeding?